Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Stephen Campbell, worked in hospital administration for 20 years, acquired his master's degree in information systems, and went on to pursue his greatest love, teaching, where he served as a college professor and eventually educational dean for another 20 years. It was as a professor that Stephen developed a curriculum based on brain science to help students end negative thinking, improve focus and clarity, and ultimately transform their lives. So without further ado, join me in welcoming Stephen Campbell.
I am so excited. The intelligence in this room is almost dripping off the walls, so I don't even know, gosh, where to start. First of all, you're taking a picture. I'm going to save you the problem. I've written down every word I'm going to say today, and I put them on a Word document. So the slides are on the right, the words are on the left. And so afterwards, Mary, sweetie, give Mary your, there's a place where you put in your name and your email address. Please print slowly, and then I'll send them to you tonight as a PDF. And that way you can sit back, relax, enjoy. At the very end, there's about 12 different books that I've used to get this stuff. So, but I want this to be a fun time. So you can take your notes if you want to, and that's fine, but you don't really have to because you're going to get it all. Okay? Okay. So, where do we begin? Let's begin with this. Okay, right now while I'm talking to you, you are talking to yourself physiologically hundreds of times faster. Now, the studies differ. Some say three times faster, sometimes seven times faster if you're alone. I think it's hundreds, and here's the reason I think that. Because when I talk to you and you talk to yourself, mainly while you use words, mainly you use pictures and feelings. So when I think of Mary, my wife, I don't think of her words. I think of how I feel about her and how pretty she's become to me in the 46 years we've been married. So you really are talking to yourself far faster than I'm talking to you right now. But here's the important point, and this is the reason I came here, and this is all in one sentence why I'm here tonight. Okay? Okay, so, oh, this is so great. This is my important spot. Good. Okay, good. Okay, so look at me. Ready? Here we go. I'll say it slowly so you don't miss it. While you are talking to yourself, ready? Your brain is believing everything you tell it without question.
Ew.
That's scary, and that's wonderful. So when you say, I just cannot do this, you know what your brain says? Your brain says, oh, okay, yeah, you're really right, you can't. That's the scary part, but there's a wonderful part. When you say, I can do this, what does the brain say to that? Okay. And then becomes obsessed with finding ways to do it. Now, is what you're saying true? Your brain doesn't even care. And when I heard that in psychology class, I was years ago, I was really skeptical. I think one of the best books that talks about that is Phantoms in the Brain, written by Dr. V.S. Ramachandran, out of UC San Diego. Phantoms refer to phantom limbs that have been amputated. And a patient will go into a doctor's office. He'll say, you got to help me. I can't do a thing with my arm. And the doctor may have to say, well, that could be because I cut off that arm 6 months ago. And the patient says, you didn't tell my brain that. My brain still thinks it's there. My brain wants to pick things up with it. And it cramps up and it gets itchy and achy. So the brain doesn't care whether what you're saying is true or not. But the person we're going to really center on in today is Dr. Albert Ellis. Dr. Ellis is regarded by psychologists as the second most influential psychologist in the history of psychology. Carl Rogers usually comes in at number one with his therapy, and Freud comes in at number three. Ellis comes in at number two. Here's what he developed and suggested that has since been validated by decades of research all over the world. Okay? Here we go. This is so exciting. Everything you can do today is primarily based on what you say to yourself about yourself today. Now, notice I'm emphasizing the word today. When he suggested this, psychology had an absolute conniption fit. They said, no, 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 no. The way you are today is because of your childhood. An unresolved childhood conflicts. Okay, that was Freudianism. That was followed by behaviorism. Dr. B.F. Skinner, Harvard University. He says, no, no, no. The way you are, it's all cause and effect. That was followed by, it's on your genes. That didn't last too long. That was followed by environmentalism. It's in your environment, your culture, your birth order. And Dr. Ellis came back and he said something really interesting. He said, you know what? I think they're all true. How could they all be true? Because when you say it and lock onto it and make it the primary message, your brain's job is to make it true. So let me give an example. For the first 42 years of my life, I said to myself, I'm really dumb in math. And guess what? I was. Couldn't do numbers. But I discovered computers in the 70s, began messing around with computers and stuff, and then got a graduate degree in computer science, began teaching computer courses. And students began saying, I'm sorry, so then the dean came to me and he said, one of our math professors just quit, so you are our new math professor. I can't do numbers. He said, you want a job? Learn. There's the book. You're teaching math next semester. Well, I needed the job, so I ran down to the Rohnert Park Library of all places, and I picked up all the books on brain-based learning. That's how this whole thing started back in the 80s. And I began studying how the brain learns, which I'll share with you in a second. And students began saying, oh, you're such a good math teacher. You really are. And then the dean said, all the students saying, I will only take math if Mr. Campbell teaches me. And I began switching what I was saying to myself. I began saying, wait a minute. If I'm so smart with computers, I've got to be smart with math. And what did my brain say? Okay. Was it true? Don't care. But you keep saying it, and you keep doing it, and you keep thinking it, and you keep enjoying it, and you keep trying new things. And you know what happens? I got really smart with math. I ended up writing 2 college textbooks. Well, what do you think? Computer software and math. Was it magical? No. Here's the point, and here's why I'm so glad that you're here today. Back to my important spot. Ready? Here we go. Nice and slow. Everyone watching? Okay, here we go. I get so excited. If everything you can do today is primarily based on what you say to yourself about yourself today, you can change what you are saying to yourself about yourself. When? Today. This moment. And what does your brain say? Okay. True. Don't care. All I care is what you tell me. Can you see where we're going on this? Wait till we get there. This audience is going to be, oh my God. But before we get there, we need to talk about how much you can learn. Because people say, you know, when I'm older, I'm stuck this way. I was raised this way. I can't understand math like you can, or I can't do this, I can't do this. So let's talk about how your brain learns physiologically, okay? This is our daughter. Oh, I'm sorry. This is a wonderful book on neuroplasticity, which we'll get to, okay? This is our daughter, Sarah. And this is her brain without the labels, okay? This is what her brain looked like when she was about 3 years old in terms of what she knew about a city. Blank slate. She was raised in Rohnert Park. Has anyone been to Rohnert Park? Have you? Okay. The closest thing to Rohnert Park is the Raley Shopping Center. So she knew nothing about a city, absolutely nothing. So that's what her brain looked like in terms of a city. Mary was an educator. And so she said to me, we got to teach Sarah about the city. I mean, we got to do this. And I'm an academic, so I read her a book. Here's what the brain does. I read Sarah a book, and the brain recorded that book as a neural cluster right under the prefrontal cortex, right under your forehead. I'll show you a picture of one in a second. I read her another book. The brain recorded that. Then we introduced her to some friends in San Francisco and Oakland. And then we showed her some buildings and some streets and some parks and some lights and some cars. And we showed her all this stuff during the day. tours and all these things. Okay, now, here's what happens. When Sarah went to sleep that night, here's what her brain does. Here's what your brain does. First of all, it says, "Ah, great. Now leave me alone for the next 8 hours. Because now what I need to do is I need to spend the next 8 hours making sense out of all the stuff that you gave me during the day. And this is the only time I have to do that." So when you're asleep, here's what your brain does. It looks at all the stuff that you've learned and it tries to find connections. It tries to find relationships. It tries to find similarities. So here's a book about a city. Here's a book about a city. They both have got parks, lights, cars. There's no connections. You know what there should be. And if it can't find them, you know what it does? It creates one. Connects those two clusters. Axons, dendrites, synapticlets, dopamine, etc. It finds another one and another one. And now what you're watching is you're watching Sarah learn. This is what your brain does when you learn. This is what your brain does at night when you're asleep. We now know that your brain is more active when you're asleep than when you're awake. It's making sense out of all the stuff that you gave it. And over time, what happens is it develops what is called a pattern of a city called long-term memory. And now Sarah will never forget what a city is. It's got books and people and cars and streets and all these wonderful things. So now what we want to ask ourselves is how many patterns can your brain carry? The patterns are based on the connections right there. So we have to determine how many connections your brain will carry. So let's do that next. Those connections are based on the number of brain cells that you have. Which is actually, you know what? I spoke to a physician who said to me a couple of days ago that they think it's now, I say it's 100 billion. He says they just found a study that says it's 82 billion. So I may have to change that a little bit, but it's a lot, okay? So we'll just keep it, that's even, but 100 billion, okay? So the brain's got about 100 billion brain cells, and each of those cells are connecting to an average of 10,000 other cells. So that's not a multiple, that's a power. So the number of connections which the human brain can carry is 100 billion to the power of 10,000. That's a big number. That's 100 billion times 100 billion times 100 billion, 10,000 times. Okay? This is a picture of prefrontal cortex tissue. Can you see the clusters? That might be a book. That might be lights. That might be skyscrapers. There's the connections here, right there. Dr. Ramachandran says that if you take a speck of brain the size of a grain of sand, you got 100,000 neurons and 2 million axons and 1 billion synapses. But what's even more amazing is that your brain takes up about 2% of your body weight. That 2% uses up 20% of your energy. It uses up more energy than your heaviest muscle, which is your gluteus back here. It also uses up 20% of your air, 25% of your blood, 30% of your water, 40% of your nutrients all go to your brain. Wow. Now, what I've been teaching you so far this evening is academic stuff, what I call academic psychodribble, which is really interesting, but who cares? Because if I can't apply it to my life, it's not going to do us any good. So let's begin applying this. If we don't use it, we'll lose it. Are you with me? So now let's start some application. We'll do this through a whole time together. Because I want you to get used to say, oh, I can think differently and I can use this and I can use that. So let's do this now, okay? I want to show you how many patterns your brain will carry. And to do this, I'm going to have you read this with me out loud. We'll start at the very top and go down the bottom. I want every mouth moving. Okay, I'll help you. Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3. The phenomenal power of the human mind. Can you read this? I couldn't believe that I could actually understand what I was reading. According to research at Cambridge University, it doesn't matter in what order the letters of a word are. The only important thing is that the first and last letter be in the right place. The rest can be a total mess, and you can still read it without a problem. This is because the human mind does not read every letter by itself, but the word as a pattern. Amazing, huh? Yeah. And I always thought spelling was important. Give yourself a hand. Now, let's go deeper. We're going to keep going deeper. There are four misspelled words in that paragraph. Two of them are on the bottom line. What are they? Thought is no G. Got all that ready. What's the other one on the bottom line? Important. Okay, go up four lines. Go up four lines. Go up four more lines. Problem, no L. And what's the last one? I'm sorry, go up three lines for the last one. This line right here. Nope, got that one. It's on this one right here. Because, no you. Hello. Didn't that blow you away? Okay, what does this say? No, go ahead. This message serves to prove how your mind can do amazing things. In the beginning, it was hard, but now your mind is reading this line automatically without even thinking about it. So do you know why Mary and I drove? Actually, I spoke in San Mateo earlier today, but we came up here and we drove here. Do you want to know why we came here? Because these next two slides, once I give you these slides, you can go home if you want to, but I don't want you to, but you can, okay? Here we go. These are the most important slides of the entire presentation. The primary element that holds us back from learning and growing and changing is what we say to ourselves. My dear friends, the primary element that holds you back from anything, relationships, getting ahead, accepting yourself, accepting your mistakes, realizing who you are, is not where you were born or how you were raised. It's what you are saying to yourself right now. Now, why is that so exciting? Because you can change what you are saying to yourself when? Now. And what does your brain say? Okay, is it true? Don't care. Let me tell you about Susie. I ended up teaching math at the University of San Francisco. And Susie came to my office after the first day of class, sat down. She was very shy and looked across from me. And she said, Mr. Campbell, I'm so glad you're my professor because I'm a C student in math. And I've never been able to get above a C in math. And so don't feel bad when I get my C because I know you're a really good professor. But that's all I'm going to get it. So don't feel bad. Okay. So I said, well, Sue, I used to be that same way. I said the same thing to myself, so let's work together. So I worked with her. We got a tutor for her, and she got an A in the first midterm. Okay, so I gave her the test, and she looked at it, and she absolutely freaked out. She freaked out. She said, and then she looked at me, and she said, oh, Mr. Campbell, this is a mistake. I said, what do you mean? She said, I've never gotten above a C in a math test. You must have made a mistake. And I said, I didn't, Sue. This is a genuine A. So then she looked at it longer. And you never forget a moment? This is a moment I'll never forget. She looked at it longer, and then a big smile creased over her face. Her eyes lit up. And she looked up, and she said, do you know what this means? And now I'm getting really excited. So I sit down next to her and I say, okay, so you tell, what does this mean? What does this mean? She said, Mr. Campbell, this means that when I flunk the next test, I can still maintain my C. And I said, Sue, just get an A in every test. She said, I can't. Why? What was her answer? Everyone, what was her answer? I'm a C student. And that's exactly what happened, by the way. She flunked the next test. She got a C in the course. So I sat down with her. I said, Sue, what would have happened if you had flunked this first test? Do you know what she said without a moment's hesitation? What do you think she said? What did she say? I got to get an A on the next test to maintain my C. I would, because I've got to maintain my C. I said, Sue, just get an A in every test. She said, I can't, Mr. Campbell. Why? Because I'm a C student. I'm stuck. I've always been this way. I'm too old. I'm too young. I can't really change. It's too hard. Or, do you know when your old life ended? 1 second ago. Do you realize that?
Over.
Which means, when did your new life begin? 1 second ago. Now do the math. 60 seconds per minute, 60 minutes per hour, 24 hours per day. In one 24-hour period, you've got 86,400 new opportunities for a new life every single day. All you have to do is take them. Now, you can say, you know, that's a stupid way to think. And when you say that, what will your brain say? Okay. Or you can say, whoa, that's a new way to think. I like that. Maybe I can use that. And what does your brain say to that? Okay. But here's the exciting part. When you lock onto it, your brain looks for ways to make it work. It really comes down to you. You see, your brain is stuck up here. It's a captive audience. You're the only person it listens to. You're the only one it listens to. What about what others say to me? Listen, my dear friends, what others say to you do not become a part of you until you agree with them. You've got to give them permission. Ready for the exciting stuff? Here we go. Here's why you came tonight. And this is, I've got 10 different presentations on 10 different subjects, self-images, emotions and stuff. This is my most fun one. This is my fun one. I love this fun one. So this is the one we're going to talk about tonight. Okay? Creating goals that actually work. So that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Okay? Now, studies have shown, and these are all in my book, so if you want to see the studies, they're in my book. Studies have shown that when we stop creating goals, we actually begin to die. Goals are not options. When you give up, so does your brain, followed by your body. And we've seen this over and over and over. There's a number of studies. The study that I want to talk about is the work of Dr. Viktor Frankl, who wrote A Man's Search for Meaning. For those of you who don't know about Dr. Frankl, he's got something like 29 honorary degrees before he died. He was a psychiatrist who ended up at Auschwitz for 2 years. And he wrote Man's Search for Meaning as he noticed how other inmates reacted to the horrors of the camps. And he saw that the inmates that survived started up here first. And the rest came. That's what he discovered. That's how logotherapy basically is developed. Okay? So let me give you an example of that. Okay? In fact, he says, the way a man imagines his future affects how long he will live. Wow. Wow. So let me give you an example. When Mary and I first married, we were from the old school, didn't sleep together, and so the honeymoon night, and then next morning, too much info, but okay. So I woke up Mary at 5:30 in the morning because I was so excited, and I woke her up. And I said, oh my God, you're beautiful. And she opened up one little eye and she said, Steve, it is 5:30 in the morning. I am not beautiful at 5:30 in the morning. But you know what? She said that for the next 10 years during the day. I'm not beautiful. I'm not beautiful. And then after about 10 years of this, she was waking up on a Saturday. And I said to her, my prayer is that someday you see in your heart what a beautiful person you really are. And she looked at me for the longest time. And she said, you know, we've been married for 10 years. You've never lied to me. And every single time I tell you I'm not beautiful, I'm calling you a liar. Why would I want to do that? So, honey, if you think I'm beautiful, you're right, I am. And what did her brain say? Okay. Her brain did not say, no, 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 no. You can't do this. You can't do this. You've been saying for 35 years you're not pretty. You got to get some therapy. You need to get some books. Her brain said, absolutely. Now, let me tell you about Ernie. I met Ernie at Oakmont about 5 years ago, and he came up to me after a presentation I did on learned optimism. And he said to me, I got to tell you a story. He said, I turned 91 of the week before your series began. And when I did, I looked in the mirror and I said to myself, 91, that's really old. And then I realized that when I said that, what did my brain say? You're right. And I began realizing, oh my gosh. So I went back to the mirror after you talked about last week. And I looked in the mirror and I said, wait a minute. 91, in less than 10 years, I could be 100. And 10 years after, I could be 110. What are you going to do with 20 years? So he said, I went to the UC Berkeley website. I signed up and I've taken a course on relativity and calculus. I've always wanted to do that. But then he said, I heard your story about Mary. And when I forgot to tell you, Maggie was standing behind him about 10 feet, leaning up against the wall. This guy was probably 6'2". She was maybe 5'1". She was smiling so much, I thought her face would break. So when I heard your story about Mary, we went home and we were sitting across from the breakfast table. I need to tell you something about me, Steve. I was raised in the old South. I went through the Depression. I was with the army that opened up Auschwitz, so I saw the horrors there. So I've never been emotional. I've never told Mary that I loved her, and she's accepted that. But when I heard your story, we were sitting across from the family room, from the kitchen, and I looked at her and I said, I've never told you this, but I am so glad we're married, and I'm so glad that you are who you are. And he said, Steve, it has changed our marriage after 67 years. It's never too late unless you say it is. Wow. Now, what gets in the way of our goals? You know what gets in the way of our goals? The how question. How am I going to do this? Here's a goal. I want every step that's outlined. And we like that. Some of us people like, no, every step, what do you do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And that sometimes, not all the times, but can really get in the way. It really gets in the way. So let me tell you a story about Sarah. Sarah decided she wanted to go to USF. And we were all very, very excited. And we talked about it on a Sunday night. And we prayed about it. And we developed an affirmation for it. And the next morning, I went to work. Now, I had been taking this same route for 7 years. North on 101. This time, when I take that same route, I notice a sign under the 12 interchange that said, University of San Francisco. I had never noticed that sign before in the 7 years I had taken that route. Why did I notice it this time? Why did I notice it this time, everyone? Because my brain was looking for it. When you create a goal, even though you may not know all the steps, your brain's job is to find some way to do it. And that's what it does. It begins looking all over the place to find. If you don't have goals, the brain doesn't know what to look for.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
And so let me tell you a really short story. 10 years before, I was teaching and Q education training. Are there any computer geeks here? Oh, do you remember Q books? Do you remember them? Or do you don't? I'm not sure. That was too old. Okay, that was too long ago. But you're a computer geek. God bless you. Okay. Q books were these big, huge 800-page things, and if you were a computer geek back in the 70s, you had a Q book for Fortran and BASIC and all this other stuff. Okay, so Q called me. They called me, Q, the largest computer publishing company in the world, and they said, we want you to write a book for us. To make a long story short, I wrote the book. They loved it. They just absolutely loved it. They called it Office 97 Complete, and it was so exciting. And they said, we're going to make 30,000 copies the first go around, and we'll sell them to students for 70, and you'll get 20. What's 20 times 30,000? a lot of money. And then every single time a new version of Office comes, we'll have you write another book for us. So I said to Mary, we're set. There's our daughter's education. There's our insurance. There's our retirement. So we're set. So I wrote the book. And when I wrote the book, just when it was finished, Q got purchased by Pearson Education. And Pearson never marketed my book. I think we sold 18 in Australia. Okay? That was it. But by that time in my life, I had learned nothing in life is wasted unless you say it is. So my mom's impressed. Mary's impressed. My kids are impressed. Okay. 10 years later, Sarah decides she wanted to go to USF. There was USF in the own backyard. So I got up, set up an appointment, and I brought my two books that I'd written on software. Okay. Put them in front, had an interview. And they said, I'm sorry, we can't hire you because you don't have a master's, you don't have a doctorate. You got to have a master's or doctorate to teach for USF. I said, well, thank you very much, and I forgot about it. 6 months later, they called me. They said, this is USF. Do you remember us? I certainly do. We'd like for you to teach for us. I can't. I don't have a master's or a doctorate. Yes, but you're a published author. But my book never sold. We don't care. So here's what we'll do. We'll grandfather you in. And if you agree to teach with us, for every unit that you teach, we'll give you a free unit. So I taught for USF for the next 10 years in Sacramento and San Francisco, and it paid for Sarah's education and my master's. And I figured out using Excel how much money I made by what they paid me hourly and the tuition I did not have to pay. I figured out I made around $100,000 in a book that never sold. Don't worry about the how question in the beginning. Your brain figures out amazing ways to get it done. It really does. Okay? In fact, there's the book. Aren't you impressed? I'm impressed. Okay. Okay. Now, set the goal first and the brain will search out the how. That's its job. Lock on to what you want and your brain will figure out a way to do it. And I'm sure that I could have you raise your hand. Many people would say, yes, it happened to me. I locked what I wanted and the brain found a way to do it. It's absolutely amazing what the brain does. Yes.
I've heard the statement, ready, fire, aim.
Yeah. Backwards. You think it's backwards, but it's not. That's right. It's amazing what the brain can do. Now, let me show you how this works physiologically. We've got three time frames. We've got the past, the present, and the future. Okay? The past is people living in the past. They like to talk about the good old days. Well, I don't know about you, but my good old days weren't all that really good. But they like to talk about the good old days. Okay? So where will their mind always be? Where? In the past. Well, you're not here to be in the past, so we're not going to worry about that. So that's the last thing we'll say about that, okay? Because you're not here. That's not you, okay? Then you got the people who only live in the present. They only live in the present, and they always like to live in the now, okay? I'm living in the here and now. I don't live in a dream world. I'm just being practical. I'm just being realistic. So what will tomorrow always look like? Today. Which is not going to work when you want to create goals that change your life. So now let's get into the goals that you've come here to talk about tonight, okay? The future. A goal brings the future into the present before it actually is. Now, let me explain that to you. We're going to get into Gestalt psychology. Don't worry, I'm a really good teacher, so I'll tell you what it is. Gestalt psychology simply observes that your brain hates gaps, okay? So my favorite time of the year is Christmas. I love Christmas. I've got benchmarks that tell me how close we are to Christmas. The first benchmark is the Sonoma County Fair, which is the 1st of August. That means we're closer to Christmas than away from Christmas. Then the next benchmark is Christmas stuff starts showing up at Lowe's in the middle of August. Now I'm getting really excited, okay, along with Halloween stuff, but I don't care. It doesn't matter. And then the 1st of September, Christmas stuff starts showing up at Costco. Now I'm getting really excited. And then you've got Labor Day, and then you've got you have Halloween, Thanksgiving, and then Christmas. Okay, where's this going, Steve? Okay. When people put Christmas lights up and the Christmas lights are moving across the roof, are they actually moving? Of course not. They're blinking sequentially, and the brain fills in the gaps. That's gestalt. The brain hates gaps, so it fills it in. Okay? So look at that. He's a Dalmatian dog sniffing the ground. Can you see him? There's his nose. There's his nose right there. There's his front leg. There's his chest. There's his back leg. There's his toe. There's his chest, back leg, tail. Here's sort of his shoulder. Okay. But watch what, the longer you look, the easier it is to see it. Should I make something easier for you? I'll make something easier for you. Can you see the triangle? There's no triangle there, folks. Simply three Pac-Men looking at each other. And yet, what the brain does is you can see the lines. Can you see the lines the brain's creating to make that triangle? You can almost see the shade, light, dark. Isn't that amazing? The brain's creating a triangle because it hates gaps. Hates gaps. Can you see the spear? There's no spear there. But it's almost look 3D because that's what the brain's creating. It creates that 3D thing because it hates gaps. Hates gaps. Now, how do you apply this? Okay, I ended up teaching in Ohio a number of years ago. And to get back, I had to take the Atlanta airport. Did you know the Atlanta airport is the busiest airport in the world? In the world? Have you ever been there? Who's been to the Atlanta airport? It blows you away. It's like this huge shopping center. Huge. Has your own train. I mean, it makes the looks like the San Francisco little thing. And I lost my wallet in the middle of the Atlantic airport. Oh my gosh. And you got to have an ID for everything. And there I was with no wallet in the middle of the Atlantic. I never did find it, by the way. Another person thought that she bet that my pick was picketed. No, my pick was pocketed. I always get that wrong. Pocket was picket. Pick anyway, someone stole it. Okay. Now, while I was looking for the wallet, what was the only thing that I thought of? Finding that stupid wallet. Because why? There is a huge gap, and I got to close that gap. The brain hates gaps, and I, without my wallet, there's this huge gap there. Okay. Now, how long was it a passion? Until when? Until when? Until I found it or I closed the gap. You with me? Okay, so, and I never did find it. So I got in the plane and flew home and that was it. Okay, now, if I had such a passion for finding a stupid wallet, can you imagine the passion for learning, growing, and changing? Because that's what you're here tonight for. You're here, you're just saying, you know what, Steve? There's areas of my life that I want to be different. There are just areas of my life that bug me. I want to do more of this, less of that. I just want to be different here. I don't want to change me. I like who I am. But I there's this parts of me that I wish were different. Okay? And that's why you're here tonight. That's why you're here. Okay? So, brain breakthrough number one, our brain believes what we tell it. Number two, our brain hates gaps. We're going to use that to help you create goals that actually work. You ready? Here we go. Okay. Here's how we express our goals. I will lose that weight. I will pay off that loan. I will take that trip to Alaska. Okay. Here's what the brain says. Your brain says, hope you do. Sounds great. Sounds wonderful. I'm going to go take a nap. Because number one, I have no idea what's going to happen in the future. And number two, I'm so busy dealing with the present that the future doesn't really concern me. But you put your goals all out in the future somewhere out there, and I don't have to do a thing. And that's what we do. I will do this, I will do that. Another thing that we say is, I'll try. When I was a dean, a student would come in, they'd say, I'm really trying. And I put a stapler in front of them. I'd say, try to pick that up. And they'd pick it up. And I'd say, no, don't pick it up. Try to pick it up. And I didn't know what, and they didn't know what I meant. No, and you're not trying hard enough. And then what are you talking about? Here's the point. When you say, I'm really trying, you know what your brain says to that? Wonderful. Try the rest of your life. I don't have to do a thing. That's really inspiring. I'm going to go take a nap. Another thing we do is we shoot ourselves to death. Okay? I should do this. I should do that. You know what your brain says to that? Yeah, you really should. Probably won't, but you really should. Okay? So what really works? What really works is this. Okay? Goals that create a gap. I have lost that weight already. And I paid that loan off already. And I've taken that trip to Alaska already. Here's the problem. You haven't lost the weight. You haven't paid off the loan. You haven't taken the trip. That's the gap. And what have you learned? The brain hates gaps. And when you say, I'm already there, and you're not there, the brain sits up and says, we've got to do something about this. Now, admittedly, here's the first thing that it wants you to do. It wants you to give up. Don't even try, because you've been trying this your whole life, and just give up. That's the easier. The brain wants the easiest way. I was sharing just before we started. Did you know that your brain hates change? The brain doesn't like to change. Brain hates to change. Okay? It's change is scary. What if it doesn't work? Didn't work last time. Let's not change at all. But the brain loves to create new things. Loves to create new things. So rather than changing stuff, you create a new way of seeing yourself. And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes, okay? So that's the gap, okay? And the brain hates gaps. Hates them. Hates them. So let's apply this. Goal setting deliberately creates a gap that your brain, so your brain will close the gap. I'm already there. I'm already there. And the brain says, oh my gosh, no you're not. Now we need to change. Here you are. We got to figure out a way to close that gap. So let me give you an example. Let's imagine that Larry and I have been friends for years, and Larry invites me over to his house on a Saturday evening, Mary and I, and we're sitting at his dining room table, and we're looking across from his dining room over his shoulder, and there's a picture of the Mona Lisa, but it's tilted. And I'm obsessive compulsive. So I'm sitting there having a wonderful dinner and having a wonderful meal, and I'm looking at the Mona Lisa, and it's driving me nuts. And finally, I say to Larry, I'm sorry, Larry. I'm really sorry. I jump up, run over, tilt it, correct it, sit down, and I say, oh, that's better. Now I can enjoy the rest of the evening. Okay? What happened? Here's what happened. There was a tilted Mona Lisa that my brain said, that's a gap. That shouldn't be tilted. There's something wrong there. We got to correct that. And there's a part of your brain that does two things. Number one, it gives you the creativity to fix it, and it gives you the energy to fix it. It's called the creative subconscious, which we won't get into, okay? Basically, when you see a gap, the brain says, I got to close the gap. But when you say, I'll be this way or I will be that way, there's no gap at all. It's just sort of wishful thinking. And that doesn't work with the brain. But when you say, I'm already there, the brain says, okay. Okay? So the CSC, the creative, has a second and third job, and that's what we talked about. It gives you the strength to energy and straighten the picture, and gives you the creativity. Now, this is really interesting. Every seed of every invention was created that way. This is the first personal computer called the Altair 8800. Notice that there's no mouse, no keyboard, no monitor, no printer. And these, the top row of stuff, those are lights, and the next things are switches. And you had to know a binary language for it to work, okay? And it was not only that, but it was a computer kit you had to put together yourself. You had to solder together yourself. And yet people literally drove down to Albuquerque, New Mexico to pick up their Altair. And this is where Bill Gates started with Microsoft, writing the program for the Altair 8800, okay? That was a 1974 around, before the Apple, a couple of years before the Apple. Yeah, yeah. And people got so excited, they would literally drive down there to pick it up. It was such a thrill. Here's this problem. Nobody knew what to do with it. What do you do with this thing? So they began forming clubs. And the most famous was the Homebrew Software Computing Club that met every Wednesday night at Stanford University. And they would bring their Altair and they would show other people what they were doing with it. Two guys were also there. One guy was later called the Mozart of computer design. He was in high school. He would bring his computers on a wooden frame. And I saw him interviewed one time. He said, I was too shy to say anything. So I would just come in, sit down, and people would ask me. Okay? That guy was who? Steve Wozniak. Okay? There's another guy who saw what Woz was doing, and who was that guy? That was Steve Jobs. And that's where Apple got started. People trying to figure out what to do with the Altair. Okay? Okay? Every single thing in this room started with a gap. Started with a gap. I have got a LCD projector that I bought 10 years ago, and it cost me $800. 5 years before that, only colleges could afford them. They cost $7,000. The latest one I bought, which was last year or maybe this year, last year, was $400. Keeps going down because people are figuring out a way to close the gaps. That's how it works. Okay? Okay. And here's the inventor, and I love what he said. He said, "We were too young to know that it couldn't be done." Isn't that great? Isn't that great? I love that. Okay. Now, a couple of interesting things about goals, and then we'll begin to close. Okay? As you visualize the new, you become dissatisfied with the old. As you lock onto what you want, you just see, I can't go back to the old ways. But this next one is the most fascinating one, and that is that goals have nothing to do with time. Did you know that? So I taught this in universities, and I said, someone give me a goal, and let's say Mary raised a hand. She said, my goal is to lose 30 pounds in 6 months. So I said, that's great, Mary. Let's cut it down to 5 months. Can you do that? Yes, I can. Let's cut it down to 4 months. So let's see, that's 7.5 pounds a month. That can be done. I mean, it's 2 pounds a week, but I can do that. Let's cut down to 3 months. Ooh, that's 10 pounds a month. That's pushing it. Let's go down to 2 months. Ms. Cam, we can't lose 15 pounds in 1 month. Let's go down to 1 month. Now you're scaring me, Mr. Campbell. Let's go down to 3 weeks. Mr. Campbell, you can't lose 10 pounds in 3 weeks. Let's go down to 2 weeks. Are you nuts? You get down to 1 week. You can't do that. Let's go down to 7 days, 6 days, 5 days, 4 days, 3 days, 2 days, 1 day. Now. Now. I'm already there. Not a year from now. Not 6 months from now. I am there right now. Now, and you know what your brain says? Oh my goodness. We got some work to do, but let's do it together. Isn't that exciting? When I wrote my book, the original was Making Your Mind Your Mentor. They changed it, but I like my title better. A mentor is someone who sees more than you see in yourself. Okay, let's begin to close. If I stopped here and said, thanks so much, this has been great, I really appreciate this, you'd say, oh, the guy was funny, he was articulate, he was handsome. What did he say? It was something about the brain. I can't remember, but it was really good. But I don't remember what it was. And the reason is because all this stuff right now is on the left side of your brain. It's all head knowledge. It's all intellectual stuff, okay? What we need to do is we need to get on the right side where you are. Where your emotions are, because we're not thinking people who feel, we're feeling people who think. So we need to get them on the right side, okay? So that's what we'll do now, and then we'll close, okay? I'm going to give you two new ways of thinking. For those of you who have met your goals and those of you who have not met your goals, so we'll talk about meeting your goals first. If you have met your goals, oftentimes we say to ourselves, I'm so good, or someone says, good job, or if someone does say, good job, you're amazing. Do you know what we often say? We say, not really. That's embarrassing. That's egotistical. I could have done better. That's uncomfortable for me. I don't think I'm real. You know, really, no, 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 no. That's called the effort effect back in 1975. What they've learned is that most of us pass over our successes way too quickly, too lightly for them to ever become a part of who we are. We pass them over. They don't count. We were lucky, okay? And so what we're going to do is how to change, learn how to change that. Okay? So here's what I want you to do. The next time you do something successful and someone says, good job, you look at them and you smile and you say, thanks, I know. Now, I was down in Huntington Beach a couple of years ago doing an all-day seminar for a group of Kaiser physicians, and they love me. They love me. They bought my book. They bought my Audible. They signed up for my all-day seminar, which I'm also doing in March of this, actually this month in Santa Clara. And when I was driving back to the airport, I got so excited I almost drove off the freeway. I was so stoked. So I stopped by a Chevron. I got a tuna sandwich and Coke. And when the car was gassing up, I was alone. I looked at myself in the mirror, and I said, you are an amazing teacher. And what did my brain say? You really are. But this is from the University of Pennsylvania, Dr. Martin E.P. Seligman. This is so exciting. My important spot. Ready? Here's what your brain also says when you compliment yourself. Ready? Here's what it says. Ready? Don't miss this. My brain also said, ready? Here we go. And you could even be better. It opened up the gate. And I began thinking of all sorts of ways it could be a better teacher. If I'm so good with this, I could do this and that and this and that. Now, if I said, you know what, you messed up here, you messed up there, what would have happened to the gate, everyone? What would have happened? Slam shut. So let's make this doable. From now on, when someone says, good job, you look at them and you smile and you say, that makes me feel really nice. Thanks for taking the time to tell me that. And then when you get by yourself, you wallow in your success like a pig in slop. Okay? Okay, and then the last one, and then we'll close. Okay. Throw away the list. What's the list? The list is when you make those big bonehead mistakes. And you say, oh my gosh, how could I have been so stupid? And when you ask that question, your brain immediately says, oh, I know. Remember that dumb thing you did yesterday? And that dumb thing you did a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. Remember how you were the slowest reader in the third grade? And do you know what we do? Is we get out this list, we start going down the list, and here's the sad part, okay? Your brain doesn't know that those memories happened a week ago, a month ago, a year ago. So here's your new way of thinking, okay? Rather than going down the list, you're going to throw the list away. Don't need the list. Learn from your mistakes, forget the list. And then use three wonderful words. You know what the words are? The next time. The next time I'll do it this way. The next time I'll do it that way. And when you say the next time, you're saying three things. Number one, you're saying there is a next time. How many next times do we get? How many? How many, everyone? As many as we want. Isn't that wonderful? Number two, when you say the next time, you're saying I'll never give up. Ever. And number three, when you say the next time, this is the best for last, what you're really saying is, you know what? I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm still changing, which means I'm still making mistakes. But just because I fail doesn't mean I'm a failure. Thomas Edison was asked how it felt to fail 999 times looking for the filament of a light bulb. He said, I did not fail 999 times. I simply found 999 ways that didn't work. That's what we're doing. And the wonderful thing about our life, folks, is that that's all you're doing is you're simply finding ways that don't work so you can find ways that do. And either way, what does your brain say? Okay, true, don't care. I was on my way to work, this last story, and then we'll close. I was waiting for the light to change. This kid came up to me in a very, very fancy car. He looked at me. I looked at him. I knew what was going to happen. The light changed. He went peeling out in front of me, roaring up 101, passing everyone. And I had this epiphany. How many cars are already in front of him? Millions. How many cars are behind him? Millions. So maybe it's not a matter of how fast you get there. Maybe it's a matter of you're going in the right direction. But you know what? Even when you're going in the right direction, sometimes you just run out of gas. Sometimes you get a flat tire. Sometimes you even lose your way. But you know what? You can buy some more gas. You can replace the tire. You can get a map. And what's the worm for the brain just says, oh, okay. Is it true? Don't care. All I care is what you tell me. You say it, I believe it. You lock onto it, you know what I will do. I'll do everything I can to make it true in your life. Wow. That's exciting. Thanks so much.
All right. We do thank you. And you did marvelously well.
Thank you.
We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 114th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.